This is episode number 608 of the Secret Identity Podcast for August 8th, 2014. Today in our new segment, we're going to talk about the panel announcements for the upcoming Connecticut Comic-Con. We'll talk about a couple of the news bites that came out of San Diego Comic-Con 2014, in particular, some of the news about Comixology. Our reviews this week will be Star Spangled War Stories number 1 and Motorcycle Samurai. Our summer watching project will continue this week with episodes 17 through 20 of Attack on Titan. And finally, this week's creator spotlight is Mr. Mark Waid, the comics legend who I sat down and spoke with at New York Comic Fest about his digital platform Thrillbent.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids. That's a game.
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today?
Doing well, getting ready for shows. We're talking about Connecticut's Comic-Con as we are getting ready physically to get ready for Boston Comic-Con.
Yes, we are on our way to Boston Comic-Con. As you hear this, if this goes up on Friday, we will be there literally as you listen to this show. And then, of course, we have Connecticut Comic-Con coming up. And at Connecticut Comic-Con, we are going to be hosting a series of panels.
Mm-hmm.
And starting on Friday with a Doctor Who panel that you're doing.
Yes.
And then also on Friday, I will be hosting and you will be on a podcasting panel, How to Start Your Own Podcast. And Mitch will be on that as well, our good friend Mitch from the IndieCast. Mm-hmm. And we'll have another guest on that podcast as well. And then on Saturday, I will be moderating a panel on Spider-Man's Clone Saga with Danny Fingeroth, Howard Mackey, and Todd DeZago.
And that is awesome.
So three of the architects of the Clone Saga will be talking about the Clone Saga and answering questions, and we'll sort of be looking back at it. I'm super excited about that, and I feel like I need to really do my homework going into that panel, because that's a room full of talent. And
it is.
The Clone Saga is an interesting subject because it's something that for many years was pointed at and sort of reviled as one of the worst stories ever in Spider-Man's history, and yet you cannot find a trade in print
mm-hmm.
for some of the collections that came out of it. And it is something that is now a part of the current Marvel landscape and is often called back to and referred to, and Scarlet Spider's back in the Marvel universe. And so I'm excited to talk about that. And you also have a panel on Saturday, correct?
Either Saturday or Sunday, I'm not sure, but it is talking about the life and death of Archie.
Oh, right.
And Paul Kupperberg is going to be on it. And I don't know who from Archie is going to be at Comic-Con, but I think there's going to be a few other people on there. So it's going to be a lot of fun, considering we have just, over the last two or three weeks, have read The Death of Archie, The Eating of Archie, and the celebration of Archie's life.
Yes.
So a lot of stuff going on in the Archie world to talk about.
Yep. And then on Sunday, I will be moderating a panel about writing comics.
Cool.
And so lots of panels, lots of interviews that we'll be doing at that show, lots of hanging out with our buddies, because a lot of our friends are coming to Comic-Con, and I'm super excited about that. It's going to be a blast of a time.
Yeah, and just so you might not know, I don't think you know this, Brian, our good friend Mr. Steve Barker is chauffeur to the stars at this show. He's going to be picking up George Perez at the airport. So when we're in Boston, he's going to be introducing himself, saying, you know, hey, I'm the guy picking you up. Don't get freaked out.
Yep.
So we have a lot of fun. But this is going on at the Webster Bank Arena in Bridgeport, Connecticut. It's right off of exit 9 or right off of I-95. I'm not exactly sure which exit, but you will see the signs for it all over the place.
How long does it take us to get there from here? Do you know?
From us, it's about an hour and a half.
Okay.
We can take the Merritt Expressway down, cut through, and miss a lot of that
right.
gooey junk in the middle, because sometimes 95 is a little rough. But for the guest list that's going to be there, you've got our good friend, Mr. Joe Caramagna, our good buddy, Chris Giarusso, George Perez, who I mentioned, Billy Tucci, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who is one of the classic 70s, 80s. He did a lot of Superman, did a ton of Jonah Hex stuff, Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Adam Kubert, Franco, who, when I saw him at the Comic Fest, I said, not Comic Fest, special edition.
Yep.
I said, you and I need to sit down and talk. So we're going to sit down and chat. Excited about that because Franco has got to be one of the coolest guys on the entire planet. Klaus Janson, Howard Mackey, Bob Wiacek, Arthur Soydum's going to be there. Author Ryan Windham, who's written a ton of Star Wars books, Paul Kupperberg, Jerry Ordway, Klaus Janson, Keith Geffen, Phil Jimenez. Phil, I have known Phil longer than anybody in the comic world, yet we've never sat down and done an interview.
So you have to.
I have got to.
Because the last time we really spent time talking to Phil, I think, was Infinite Crisis time.
Yeah.
When he was sketching on the side of people's sneakers at a Big Apple show and had a line a mile long. I would love for you to interview him.
Yeah, he's just such a great guy. And then Todd Zizago, who you mentioned in the panel. Todd and I did an interview at Albany, but because we were interrupted every 30 seconds by people wanting to buy stuff from him, which you can't fault him because that's what he's trying to do.
Sure.
I want to sit down and do a nice interview with him without interruption because he's one of the coolest guys. I had a blast talking with him. Lee Weeks, Mark Morales, Herb Trimpe, Billy Tucci. Did I mention Billy? If I'm not, I'm going to mention him again. Jamal Igle, Mike McCone. Now, as far as celebrities, you've got Michael Brendan, who you mentioned before, from Buffy.
Oh, Nicholas Brendan.
Or Nicholas. Nicholas. I said Michael. Nicholas. I'm sorry. Ray Park, who was
Darth Maul.
Darth Maul. He was Snake Eyes, and he was the Blob in the X-Men movie.
He was the...
Toad.
Toad.
He was Toad. He wasn't Blob. He was Toad. William Catt, the greatest American hero, or one of the guys from Carrie.
Yes.
Or from House 2.
House 1.
Was it House 1?
Yes, with Richard Maul.
He was like a Vietnam vet, right?
Yes.
Wasn't that what... That movie was awesome, too.
And
Night Court.
Yeah, Richard Maul ended up being the bad guy. And George Wendt is in that movie,
That's
too.
That's right.
House 2 was the one with... I forget who was in it, but it was the more Wild West themed one.
Okay. And then you have R2-D2 is going to be there.
Yes.
And R5-D4.
Oh, I love R5-D4.
He blew his motivator. Look. Yeah. How about that one? That guy's going to be there. And then you mentioned the panels. Now, there's going to be three TARDISes there. So it's going to be, I guess that would be TARDI.
I'm going to say TARDI.
Yeah, so you're going to have three TARDI that are going to be there. You have one that is from the 11th Doctor, one from the 10th Doctor, and then the War Doctor. And the War Doctor one is cool. And when you look at all three of them on the website, you will see the differences in the color, the differences in the blue. But with the War Doctor, it's all, you know, gunned up like somebody was shooting at it and stuff like that. So that is going to be cool. They are going to be right where we are.
Awesome.
So go to the website, Comic-Con, 2 C's, 2 N's. Check it out, and we hope to see you there because this guest list, I mean, I'm missing a few people on it, but this guest list is very, very good.
Well, and I'd be remiss if we didn't mention San Diego Comic-Con that just happened because a lot of our friends were at San Diego, and it's funny because this is the time of year where everyone in my family and extended family and workmates and friends who is not a comics fan, who knows that I'm a big nerd, all want to talk to me about this because they've seen it on the news or they know that this is happening. Do you go to the big show with the costumes and the people? And is that one they do the stuff that you like? It's just awesome. I wish I recorded some of the conversations that people have with me about that. And every time I'm like, well, nope, that is the biggest one. And we go to the one in New York and there's one, we do this one and I have other ones I'm doing this month. And it's nice to engage in conversations with those people because they don't usually care about that stuff. So it is an opportunity to talk about that. But it's just always funny because that's like the one time a year that people are like, oh, there's that thing that Brian spent so much time doing. Let's talk to him about that. Are you going out there? And the people who know me really well know what a huge fan I am of San Diego sports teams.
Yes.
So they always wonder, like, why are you not out? What more reason do you need to go to San Diego than to go to that show and then like go see a Padres game or something?
Yeah.
So we still haven't made it out there. One of these days we will. The problem is it's so darn expensive to go out there that it would be the only show that we did that year. And after being at New York Comic Con on a Saturday, where you literally cannot move.
That's every day there.
It's every day there. I don't know that would be the best use of our money.
That's my biggest issue with that is I hate Saturdays because you and I, we want to get stuff done. We want to talk to people. And
oh, for us, Thursdays and Fridays at New York Comic Con is when we bust tail to do interviews. We get there early. We try to get people before the crowds really get in. We try to find any quiet moment to do interviews and work around the schedules of the people that are there. But if we can do all our heavy lifting on like Thursday and Friday,
we're golden.
Then Saturday is a day where we can just go and experience the madness and not have to worry about trying to conduct an interview. And would I love to go to San Diego? Yes. And if anybody wants to fly me out there,
yep,
and let me crash on their couch and get me passes, without a doubt, I would go there. But we can either go to a lot of shows around here,
yeah,
or we can go to that show. So, yep. But there was some big news that came out of that show, and there was some news from Comixology that I feel like maybe has gone a little bit under the radar, but really needs to be talked about more. Comixology announced that you would be able to, for select publishers, download DRM-free backups of the comics you buy from them. Now, one of the big things that has been a knock against Comixology from the beginning, or some of the other services, is that you don't own the comic.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically like renting it.
You're reading
basically
it, and that's
getting
it.
A license to read it. And if Comixology went away tomorrow, then all of those comics that you purchased through them would be gone. Well, now you can download PDF or CBZ files of the comics that you're buying from certain publishers. Now, it bears mentioning that Marvel and DC are not on that list yet. However, a lot of other publishers have already signed on to make DRM-free backups of the comics that they have on Comixology available. So I think this is a huge step in the right direction because it inspires a lot more confidence, yep, about that platform, and you are getting an actual product that you can put on your own computer at home as opposed to just read on the reader app that you have through Comixology. So that is super exciting news. And then it was also announced that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is happening, I believe, in 2017.
Nice.
So before the first one even hits theaters, we have already gotten a sequel. And not that that takes the pressure off of Guardians of the Galaxy, but I'm very happy to know that even if by some stretch of the imagination this one floundered at the box office or it didn't get the same audience that some of the more mainstream Marvel movies got, we're still going to get a sequel.
Yeah, and I think they've been doing a good job advertising in a way that there's a connection. Like if you see the Guardians of the Galaxy trailers, you don't necessarily see a bunch of characters that you might not recognize. You do see them as, oh, they kind of act and look just like the Marvel guys. Like, Star-Lord has a very Tony Stark-esque personality in him. Like, you see that wisecracking, you know, Chris Pratt plays it, you know, wisecracking and very Tony Stark-ish. So there's not a tough stretch for somebody to go, oh, that's the same universe. And I think that in the advertising too, in the print ads, it says from the studio that gave you Avengers.
Right.
So they're keeping it. They're trying to show it's different, but it's still the same universe. You know, there you go.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about some comic books.
Now, just because you buy your books online doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the comic store experience. Now, many of us don't live close enough to a shop to call our own, and that's where DCBS can help you. Not only do they offer incredible discounts, but Discount Comic Book Service has the giveaways like Free Comic Book Day and Power Rings. And in the slightest chance that you have a problem with your order, DCBS is fast to make sure you're satisfied and very happy. So join the many Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them you heard it here at Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk about comic books, and you are going to start us off today with what, sir?
Star-Spangled War Stories number 1.
Now, who's this putting this out?
This is DC.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you know the writers, Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray. I don't know if you're familiar with those guys.
Is this G.I. Zombie?
G.I. Zombie.
Oh, okay. When you said Star-Spangled War Stories, I was like, so they're basically doing the same thing that they did with All-Star Western.
Yes, it
there's
is.
Sort of an umbrella title.
That's what you got. And this is almost like it was back in the old days where it looks like it's going to be, and I'm hoping it's going to be just a constant revolving cast. Let Jimmy and Justin go nuts in the crazy world of war comics. And I'm hoping that that's what they're going to do. And you start out with G.I. Zombie, and Scott Hampton does the art on this one. Beautiful, beautiful art. And you find out, you see this young woman who's in a bar, and it's a biker bar, and she's covered with tats, and the biker guys are all looking over, and she goes over and starts talking to the head of the biker gang and is talking about how she had a little bit of trouble and all this stuff. And as they go in, she plays them in pool, she beats the guys in pool, and she's almost gaining their trust and confidence. And then you see that they bring some guy in, and it's some dude that they're beating the crap out of him because he's following this bike gang It's like, you guys are all wrong. You're all bad. You're horrible. I can't believe that you guys do this. And I'm going to shut you all down. And what ends up going on is they ask her, well, if you're really one of us, you're going to help beat this guy up and do all this. And she's trying to get in. So she goes in and she is talking to him and takes out a gun and shoots him right in the head, right in front of them. And they're like, whoa, lady, you're hardcore. We were just wanting you to like scare him a little bit, maybe shoot him in the leg, not blow his head off. So they now are like, you're one of us. You can ride with us. And so they put the body in the trunk. They drive away. And then she goes back to her hotel room and she's throwing up all over the place. And she opens up the door and all of a sudden the dude is there that was shot. They cut off his hands. And you see that this guy is a zombie and he is a cop. And these two are on the prowl looking for these guys and trying to do some stuff. And you see that they're using this guy to get in because he can fake the death thing. He can do all this stuff and you don't have to worry about it. So as he is trying to infiltrate, this gang and stuff, you see that he is just nasty, ripping dudes' arms off, pulling out the limbs. A really, really, really fun story. Unfortunately, well, fortunately, unfortunately, was not what I expected because on the cover it has this zombie-looking dude with a bunch of dead soldier bodies and different helmets. So I thought, oh, zombie during World War II, weird war tales. But it was definitely more in the police drama kind of things, which wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. I didn't read it and go, huh, I got screwed out of $3. I read it and thought, this is going to be really good. Because I really like these two characters. Now, the next part that you see, because at the very end of it, they find this missile silo and you see that they're probably going to be fighting some terrorists. Next part says, Gravedigger comes calling. Now, Gravedigger was the character in Men of War who was a black soldier wanting equality on the battlefield, didn't get it. But then they turned around and said, why don't we make you like a doomsday soldier? We'll send you in all these crazy things, hoping that he was going to die in every mission, but always came back. So it'll be interesting to see what Palmiotti and Gray's take is on Gravedigger. But this was a lot of fun. This is a great avenue for one-off characters and things like that, especially with like a war theme to it. So Jimmy and Justin, nice job.
Well, and they kind of did that with All-Star Western, especially with a lot of the backup stories where you just saw the characters from the DC Western universe. Yep. That they kept bringing back in one-off stories, even though that story, that book was primarily driven by Jonah Hex. Yep. It featured a lot of backup stories with those characters, so it's kind of cool that they're being asked to take a similar approach to GI's to the Star Spangled War, yeah, or whatever it is. So I just hope that that banner doesn't confuse people.
Well,
I thought of that book as I thought it was GI Zombie number one.
Now, the interesting thing is every store, and I've been to probably four or five different stores over the last couple weeks, actually, most have had it under GI Zombie. So if you're going alphabetically, you're going to be looking for G.
Okay.
And then I managed in most excellent putting it in the S's because if you're looking for Star Spangled War, you're going to look in S.
Okay. Well, so if you go to Most Excellent, you know where you're going to find that book now.
Under S.
The book I'm going to talk about is a book that can be found over on thrillbent.com. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Mr. Mark Wade is the creator spotlight this week. And so I wanted to do a book from Thrillbent. And around San Diego Comic-Con this year, they released a new title called Motorcycle Samurai. Now, this is written and drawn by Chris Sheridan, and it's on Thrillbent, and it's put out also by Top Shelf Digital.
Mm.
So this is, I believe, at least this first installment, something that you can go, even if you're not a Thrillbent subscriber, and check out for free. And so I got an email as a Thrillbent subscriber that this was being put out as like a San Diego Comic-Con special.
Mm.
It's the first thing says, The Motorcycle Samurai in the True and Real Origin of the Motorcycle Samurai. And again, created by Chris Sheridan. It starts with a tale being told by a puppeteer. And he's saying, look and listen, friends, an astonishing tale awaits. You may have seen high wire acts and feats of strength, but you sure ain't seen a show like this one. And you're seeing the curtains open. Our tale begins in a far off in the dominion of the strange and downtrodden in a place called Cleveland. And so you're seeing that this story is sort of set in a futuristic, almost apocalyptic version of our world. But this little puppet stage where this is happening, this guy's telling the origin of this character. He's saying, it happened in a flash. The heavens sheared apart, and with a clap of thunder, our hero appeared amongst the rabid rabble. and he's telling the origin of a warrior called the Motorcycle Samurai, who had this symbol known as the White Bolt, and had found a mystical sword and was riding the countryside on her motorcycle seeking justice. And so all the kids are sitting there watching this thing, and the guy says, so she set off and searched into the wastelands in search of a great first prize, and that was the sword that she found. And then they talk about, you know, seeing her travel around, you know, writing rights and all that kind of stuff. And so after they're talking about the Motorcycle Samurai, the curtains close, and then the guy steps out from behind, and the puppet says, that was our show, a timeless epic of adventure and excitement. There'll be more to tell, of course, as you may imagine, and it will likely end in a grand fiery demise. Until then, the creators of this fine and artistic endeavor could use your loving support and currency. So he brings out the donation jar, and the guy who's holding the puppet is holding the puppet and the jar, and the kids that are around there are kind of hesitant to give him any money. And one of the kids says, you promise fisticuffs and more roughhousing. And he says to him, if you want to truly see conflict, by all means, keep pointing that finger in my face and you'll see it. And so the kid ends up giving him a coin. And as they're talking, the kids end up walking away and he doesn't get much of a donation. And all of a sudden from behind him, someone says, you got yourself in the bad position of pleasing the public. There ain't much you can do in that regard but suffer. And he turns around and you see it is, in fact, the Motorcycle Samurai that is there. And she wears a biker outfit and a helmet that has a skull painted on it that covers most of her face. And she does, in fact, have a sword. And she's talking to this guy and he's saying, well, you know, I'm a professional. And she says, well, sometimes being a professional means doing things that you don't want, sure enough. And she explains to him that she's there for business and she's there to see one of his business colleagues. And she needs to know where that guy is. And of course, he gives her the runaround. And at one point, he decides that he's going to draw down on her. And his puppet, the puppet that he's holding, is fitted with a weapon in its eye. So the puppet sort of has like this one glowing yellow eye. And he has a button on his belt that if he pushes, it'll fire a laser beam. And so he fires at her. And of course, she jumps out of the way and he completely misses her. And she whips her sword with the sheath still on it. Past him, it hits the puppet, show stage, and the stage falls on him, and he's there on the ground pinned under it, and she throws a coin in his jar and says, you guys rest up, I'll be sure to go easy on old Happy, and she leaves him to go track down his business associate, and she says, I just hope he's a little more reasonable than you two. And that's kind of how the first issue of this ends. And so this is the first installment. Again, it's over at Thrill Bent. It seems like a very cool sort of Badlands kind of tale and has the feel of kind of an old Western as well. And so very entertaining. Like most of the other things on Thrill Bent, this is just its own unique tale. You know, you can go over to Thrill Bent and you can find horror. You can find humor. You can find superhero comics, and you could find everything else you could possibly imagine. There is literally something for everyone over at Thrill Bent. And even though they now have a subscription fee, which is a mere $3.99 a month. Mm. So for the price of one comic, you're getting all of these different things a month, not to mention Mark Waid and Barry Kitson's Empire,
yes,
which has new installments coming out now. So if you wanted to see the continuation of that, all of that stuff is over there, but still plenty of stuff to sample for free. And I would highly recommend that you go over and check it out. Motorcycle Samurai is just the latest of the cool stuff that's going on over there. But thrillbent.com, awesome stuff, and pretty much designed to be read on a tablet or on a mobile device. And a lot of it uses the digital format very well in terms of how things get displayed and how word balloons come in and stuff like that. And it's something you should spend a little time on. I guarantee you'll find something you like.
Very good.
So there you go. That's your comics for this week. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will have our summer watching project, Attack on Titan. And then after that, we will come back with your creator spotlight.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.
And we are back with our summer watching project. And of course, Sarah Hodge-Weatherby has joined us once again. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be back.
Yeah, hopefully people appreciate that you literally break the speed of sound flying over here after work.
Like, yeah, it can be a little weird.
But you're here. We've got a lot to talk about tonight.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
Not the most time in the world, but we want to talk about four episodes tonight because episodes 17 through 20 of Attack on Titan sort of fit together perfectly. And before we get into them, I actually want to welcome, and I mentioned this in the beginning of our first episode, but we had a new member on the boards this week, Jet.
Yay.
And Jet specifically came onto the boards to talk about Attack on Titan and talked about some of the episodes we've already talked about. So I just wanted to read a few snippets from his post that he had put on the boards. He said, "Hi guys, I found your podcast because of the summer watching project, and I'm loving the analysis. I'm getting caught up on your archive of other episodes pre-Attack on Titan. As someone studying animation, this series really caught my eye, and I know WIT Studio, branch of production IG, has a limited budget per episode for Attack on Titan, but it's obvious to tell where they spend it on the kick-butt 3D maneuvering gear scenes." He talked about episodes 16 and 15, and for episode 16, he said, "After a second viewing, I think I know who may have killed Sonny and Bean, if my path of thinking proves to be correct. The analogy here would be episode 15 is to episode 3 as episode 16 is to episode 4. We get character building again. It fills out much of the cast for the second half of the season, but this pushes the plot into focus. We're going to retake Wall Maria, and we're going to use this as a trial run to effectively get to Shingashina and to Aaron's basement. What little we get of Irwin is good. We still don't have a clear view of who this man is and what, if any, his motivations are. The burning of the bodies ends the Trost arc, and Aaron spotting the two little kids shows how the life cycle of someone who becomes a member of the military, primarily a scout, may play out. Plus, plenty of Jean, and even what little screen time she gets, Annie has a commanding presence for being as small as she is." So I thought all of that stuff was really good.
Absolutely. I'll have to go. I apologize. I haven't had a chance to get on the boards this week, but I will go and read Jet's entire post because that sounds like I'm going to totally get a kick out of talking with him.
Yes,
very
and
cool.
He posted a ton of stuff on there. He said, "It's a pleasure to enjoy a podcast that is viewing this story through the lenses you are. Also, just a little advice, keeping with the viewing cycle, I recommend you view episodes 21 and 22 together and 23 through 25 together. Those last five episodes bleed into each other and will definitely enhance your viewing pleasure by watching them in those two separate chunks. And I'm not going to try to get your hopes up, but for me, episodes 21 and 22 as a package are the high water mark of the season. For me, it blends all aspects of the show together into a beautiful package. I'd be fascinated to listen to the three of you discuss episodes 21 and 22 and then 23 through 25 minutes after you all watch it. Or just get in touch with your inner 15-year-old and webcam your reactions while watching the episode. That'd be pretty interesting." So,
you know, I have a webcam on my computer. I can actually do that.
So I'm looking for... I've seen some of your videos.
In the members only section.
When I was reading this post, it made me think that we'll probably need to do three more installments. So we'll do episodes 21 and 22. We'll do 23 through 25, and then we'll do like a wrap up episode.
Cool.
Like a what you take away from the series episode. David Anderson also chimed in and said he had a point of confusion he wanted us to clear up. What is Zoe's last name? He said it seems to depend on where you are looking. Now, he attached a screenshot of the Google Play Store in which her last name is spelled H-A-N-Z-I, Hanzi.
Yeah, I've actually seen that. I've seen it as Hanzi. I've seen it as Hanji, spelled both H-A-N-J-I and H-A-N-G-E.
Right.
So I guess it kind of depends on where you're looking. From the majority of the fan base that I've talked to, I've been getting Hanji.
And in the subtitles, I believe it's H-A-N-J-I in the Netflix subtitles that I'm watching at home. So
they
pronounce it in the series Hanji. So I've been going with that.
I haven't had a chance to watch most of the dubbed
Yeah.
Episode I did, as I said, the last episode we all recorded together, I got a chance to see a little of it at Kineticon in kind of chunks.
Yeah.
Lauren was very kind enough to play a few great parts for me. But I don't believe I actually saw any parts of the episode that had them do the English dub version of her name.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how the English dub is handling it. I'd like to kind of go back and see that. But you have the DVDs. So
yes, I do.
We can check this.
And there are some fantastic
sets.
Probably my favorite scenes with her in this group of episodes by far.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So great. So, kick us off with episodes. So we're in episode 17 now. So episode 17 is where we start to see Commander Irwin, right? That's his name. So Commander Irwin's plan for his scout formation.
Right.
And I love two things about this. I love the strategy that goes into what this whole formation is about and the plan that they're going to have for this Titan-ridden territory. That whole strategy is fascinating to see play out. And then I especially love the way that it's presented visually.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because you have this little map. So it's almost video gamey. You have this little map in the corner of the screen that shows all of the formations that are part of the larger formation. And then whenever you're seeing characters on any part of this massive, you know, excursion that they're going on here, it flashes red to the group that they're speaking to at that the group that you're focusing on screen at the time. So you're always getting this sort of orientation of, who in the group am I looking at right now? Oh, these guys are in the middle rear of the formation. These guys are on the right flank of the formation. And so it's just this great constant cue of, this is happening here. These guys don't even know what's happening over here yet. And just how they pass message. The whole thing has a level of attention to detail to it that you just never see.
Well, and I think the really cool thing about that is that they really give you a lot of detail in exactly the way that you're describing. And they do it pretty quickly, and they do it very effectively. So you really understand what's happening very, very quickly without feeling like you have to go through 20 minutes of explanation from characters. They really make it very obvious. Particularly, and granted, I think they only use a few colors, but you really get a sense of the flares, how the flares work. And that becomes such an important plot point for the rest of these set of episodes, because now you don't, you know, every time you see a flare go off, oh, it's a black flare.
Yeah.
That's an aberration. What is that one now? Oh, it's a green flare. They're changing direction. Like, you get right away what's going on without anyone having to be like, oh, it's a Titan coming up behind us. You know that already. They don't have to try to pull any of those tricks.
And you definitely are getting, again, like, this episode, I think, begins with, doesn't it say the year? It says, like, year 830 or something like that.
Yeah, they usually flash the date in those little sort of encyclopedic snippets.
It was, like, the first time I ever really noticed that and thought, okay, they're even doing more and more confusing the people watching this with, you can't pinpoint a time because you've got like these pincer movements, like we were talking about with the maps. I mean, this was like watching the military channel and watching the Attack on Gettysburg, where you've got this guy going over here and this group going over here. So you've got these fairly modern kind of war movements, but then you're using flares and not radios. And I mean, it just, that stuff was like, again, I love that it kept me off guard, but I do want to say every time they showed a horse, the horses have got immaculate teeth. The horse's teeth are so perfect.
That does not surprise me at all.
That is why I focused on that.
And I don't want to get into it right now because we'll get into it a little bit later. But I think it's interesting that they made sure to let us know the year again, because that, of course, becomes a very important plot point at a little bit of a later time in this set of episodes.
Right.
Because there's a very specific thing that comes out about why they're deciding and making assumptions about something based on a certain amount of time period. So you kind of need to know when the time is so that you understand where they're coming from.
Because it's almost a setup from the beginning of this that not every piece of this formation knows what everybody else is doing. Not everybody knows what the full plan is. Commander Irwin has been keeping a lot of the details close to the vest. And so they need to rely on understanding their role and playing their part to perfection. And it's almost, whether it's a military operation or whether it's a sports team that needs to execute the way that they need to execute, like, everybody has the role to play. Stick to your role. Trust your fellow colleagues and do what you're supposed to do. And so the whole communication system, like, it only works if everybody's doing it the way that they're supposed to. It only works if everybody's following orders. And so you just see that continue to play out and sometimes hit speed bumps as they sort of go along. And so there's this great sort of opening where you're seeing this formation, and then they start spotting Titans. And then the action starts to pick up a little bit, and the pacing starts to pick
up. Things start and it's going wrong, and you see it go wrong, even when flanks don't know what's going on
and
necessarily.
They start second-guessing each other, and that was I like that, too. I mean, you don't like it because it's not going to go well, but you're like, wait a minute, I thought these people were supposed to... Why is this one coming running up?
Right.
Where was the group that was supposed to stop this one or at least warn us it was coming?
Right. Yes.
Well, and I think, obviously, they get into more of it later on, but I think this becomes a metaphor on top of a metaphor because we're also dealing with the fact that Aaron is so new to this group. The group doesn't really know him so well, so they don't know whether they can really trust him. He doesn't know them so well. So it's almost a bigger metaphor for this sort of internal breakdown with this smaller group of people. There's also a larger breakdown happening in the entire squad. Right.
And he's not with his friends. He's with Levi, and he's with that core group that he met when he first came to... came to this new headquarters. Mm-hmm. And so he's struggling, you know, he wants to know what's going on. It's bothering him that he does not know what's going on at all this place. And he's sort of to the middle rear of this formation. So there's a lot of people that are out farther and wider than he is. And he is very insulated from what's going on. And obviously that's for a particular reason, but he's really struggling with that.
And he doesn't like it very much at
all.
He's the guy that's used to being like, I'm going to kill all the Titans. Here's my swords. Let's go. And they're going, sit down, shut up, and do what we tell you. You're not going anywhere.
Right.
And he's not doing well dealing with that.
No, because now he's one of many, and he's not super special dude. He is... You be quiet and you ride ahead and this is what we do and you'll know what you need to know. And he's really struggling with that. And that just continues to build, obviously.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the reason that so much of this is falling apart is we get the introduction of a new Titan that we have not seen yet before.
But we met at Kineticon.
Yes.
So I wasn't even surprised when she showed up.
This is true. We did meet the female Titan at Kineticon. And I really, the thing that really struck me about these episodes when the female Titan shows up is, as creepy as all the other Titans have been, I really feel like the animation and the characterization of that Titan made her literally the creepiest one out of the
whole. Without a doubt.
There's, first of all, the fact that she's so fast. And I love the animation on her, especially when she decides to go into a serious sprint where she gets down low and she's doing the scissor arms that you see sprinters in like Olympic races and stuff. All of the animation on her is just spot on to how athletes really look when they're doing stuff like that. So that makes her all the more realistic, which makes her way more creepy because there's this thing with no skin and, you know, kind of going along.
An athlete is the right
term
because not only how fast she is, but the way she maneuvers is so far ahead of any Titan that they've seen so far that it's just a whole new level of terror that a lot of the initial soldiers completely underestimate.
Oh, absolutely.
A little more thinking involved. Because even the way she dispatches certain people.
It's the adjusting there's a that little, gets yeah. them by well, surprise.
The funny thing is I wouldn't even say a little more thinking. This is the first time that we've seen a Titan that is obviously, other than Aaron, and even Aaron goes into the fugues and he just kind of is on autopilot. This is the first time that we have seen a Titan that specifically has human intelligence. There is an absolute purposefulness for what she does. When she kills people, she kills them not just effectively, but brutally.
Yeah, brutally.
Way more than any other Titan we've seen so far. So far, yes, it's horrible what the Titans been doing, but it's always in this very like animalistic sort of this is just what we do sort of way. She almost is gleeful about it. There's a couple of times in these various episodes, and I'm going to jump a little bit of back and forth because I don't think you can talk about this with certain scenes,
right?
But like, for example, when she kills, I think it's Gunter actually, when she has him, he's on his line, he tries to cut her, and she grabs the line and she's literally like spinning him like a toy on one end, and there's no reason for her to do that. He's dead already. But it's this very much like, hey, look what I'm doing to your comrade, guys. Look how awful this
and
is.
When they
Why
look,
don't you come back over here?
There's like this quick, there's one slowdown of that where
you can see him.
You just see his ragdoll body.
He's like flopping around.
He's completely broken.
It's horrible.
It is horrifying.
Every time she does anything, when she kicks the guy on the horse, every time she kills somebody, it is done in a way that is the most shocking way you can do in that moment. It's purposeful. She has a purpose for killing these people, but she's obviously doing it to get people's attention.
Right.
And there's no question about it. It's almost like a serial killer.
Mm. Right.
And yet, we have this moment where she takes down a couple of people. Here's Armin on the ground. She lifts his hood up to see if he's Aaron, which is the first time we really see, yes, this is absolute human intelligence. She's checking to see who she's taking out to try to find this guy. she realizes it's not Aaron, and yet she leaves him there. She doesn't kill him. So then you start going, whoa, what's that all about?
Which immediately, my theory on that was that this is someone who recognizes Aaron, first of all, recognizes Armin, outside of Aaron.
Right.
Like, clearly this Titan is looking for Aaron, so would recognize Aaron. But this was not just another nameless face to this Titan. Mm-hmm. This was someone else that she recognized. So it had to be someone that knew him. And then also, when they showed her eyes, I immediately thought of Annie. Mm. I immediately thought of Annie because Annie is supposedly with the military police and is not part of their group. And that just, I just felt like that I was looking at her when they had those close-ups, and so, and her and Armin had some moments where there was a mutual admiration society there of, you know, I think you're a lot better than maybe you give yourself credit for. And I think you're a lot better than maybe you give yourself credit for. And so I like that, but that was a great moment because you also want to see how Armin responds, and he responds by immediately piecing that out. Like, okay, so they must be going after Aaron then. And he then uses that knowledge to advise his teammates to cover themselves with their hoods so that they're not
alive.
As recognizable. Right. Which, again, I love that they keep beating that drum of, this is a guy you want to have around when you have to.
Right.
And he, instead of so much being the strategist of, let's sit down and let's plan this out, he's getting better and better at reacting to whatever the situation is.
And thinking
on the fly and adjusting on the fly. And he does that here. And so, and he's also like your voice, because as you're piecing things together, Armin's piecing those things together. And it just, that just works so well.
I think you're right. And I think whoever she is, the fact that she spares Armin, the fact that it becomes very obvious very quickly, she knows exactly how their equipment works, where they're going to go. She does the whole thing where she blocks the back of her neck constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows what they're doing. She knows what their strategy is. She obviously has, if not the training, then at least the background of saying, this is how this equipment works. This is how they train these guys to do this. I know exactly what they're going to do, which definitely makes me think that no matter what else we're talking about, somebody in either the military police or somebody in the survey corps, someone who's actually in the military, who's been trained on all of this stuff.
Yep.
My suspicion is, as just a fan in general, and also from the way she reacts, that we're going to be finding her amongst the original cadets that we met at the beginning of the series.
Absolutely. I agree.
And I think that whoever she is, that's kind of very obvious at this point that there's relationships going back and forth. I think you're on to something with Annie. I also thought it would be kind of like, I kept going through, okay, who have we met female-wise so far? So then I was like, well, maybe it's that weird lady that's just shown up a couple of times. I don't even know her name, but she's dark-haired, and she kind of has that Annie thing going on. She's very, like, short, and we've only seen her a few times. She almost has freckles, and she's older. We also have Krista, who's, like, everyone's favorite. Like, I brought your horse, and here's bread. I know you've been running around.
And she shows up later on in the episodes,
and I kept thinking, how ironic would it be if, like, the nicest girl in the whole thing turns out to be this serial killer?
Could be a possibility, because she shows up substantially later on, after they get attacked
with the horses and everything,
to kind of save the day for them.
So I'm not really sure what I think in this whole scenario, but I think they've thrown enough clues on the ground, but there's a lot of good paths that can be followed along this line.
Right. And so, you know, they spend the time showing you what the formation is supposed to be. Then they start showing you how it breaks down. Then they start showing you how they adjust, where you see messages being passed to the middle of the group where Levi and Aaron are and things like that. And then he sends Petra, I believe, off to deliver a message in another direction when they get word that things are not going so well over here. Because in addition to this female Titan, you also have now other Titans sort of breaking the ranks at some places, and it's not going so well for people. And then the female Titan showing up in the middle of these encounters and really just destroying everyone. I mean, she's just making quick work of any soldiers that she comes across, and then just immediately changes direction and goes off in search of Aaron. And it's just this force of nature.
Well, one of the things I found really interesting towards the end of the episode particularly is that I really find Raynor a really interesting character, because we've seen him some, but we really haven't seen him in action all that much. I also had to, maybe this is the net, I know this is the Japanese Netflix translation. I don't know the other translations, but I kind of laughed and found him a little creepy when he kept saying stuff about the Titan's butt. Like, oh, that's the one with the nice butt, I think is the translation. I was a little like, Okay, Reiner, you haven't really been out with a girl in a while, have you, dude?
Right.
All right. But I really think it's interesting, sort of they set you up at the end of the episode where she grabs him out of the air and she's looking at him. I mean, it's that very intense, like, you're mine, little man, I'm going to crush you. And then he actually manages to mess her up and get away.
Which is pretty amazing.
Which
because
is.
Because he sort of slashes his way out of her hand right after you think that she just squashed him.
Right.
And he bursts out and then saves Armin and
right. So I was
dynamically.
Kind of, yeah, yeah, I thought that was some really nice, quick, but well put together character development. Like,
yes.
Then you realize, okay, this is one of like the Mikasa level bad guys
yep.
of this group. Like, he can handle himself.
Yeah,
I
awesome.
Thought that
just
was kind of
awesome
cool.
moments from start to finish. And that kind of plays out over the next episode too.
Mm-hmm.
This whole notion of certain parts of the formation breaking down, the messages being traveled back and forth, and people questioning sort of what the goal is here. Like, what exactly are we trying to do here, and where exactly are we going? And thinking in some cases, like, shouldn't we be retreating now because things are not going the way that we thought they were going to go, and yet we're
right.
still going? Like, what's the deal?
Right.
People
right.
start to get second guess, like, what things aren't going the way we hoped they were. Why aren't we turning around and going back? We're
right.
continuing to push forward. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's again, I think it's another reflection of that sort of larger picture, smaller picture of learning,
yep.
learning trust amongst the team. Although I think for a while they do really, I mean, there really is a very good sense even for the viewer of, do they have a plan or are they just
right.
trying to cover the fact that they have no idea what to do at this point? They weren't expecting this thing.
Right.
They're just trying to keep everyone from panicking. It's
right.
kind of an interesting dichotomy that they have going on there. And I really think, especially leading into this episode, that again, kind of going back to a little bit of what we were talking about on the female Titan, that in the first episode to some extent, but definitely in 18, we really see that this is the first time that we've seen a Titan that we know was human driven. We suspect that the Colossus and the armored Titan are as well, but she's the first one that we've seen that has specifically gone after to kill humans. Like,
right.
we know that the armored Titan, the colossal Titan took the wall down. They caused humans to be killed, but we never actually see them specifically target and kill humans. And this is the first time we really see someone that we know has that intelligence. And it's really, it just gets creepier and creepier and more gruesome as the episode goes on. To the point where I just was really like, oh God, take her down now, please. Is take her head off. Like, she's really one of the few Titans I've seen so far that I really got behind the whole idea of, like, revenge. I understand yeah. Eren now. Revenge. Take her out, you know. They just do such a great job of building that.
Yep. Absolutely. But that was not to be, because she is pretty much an unstoppable force.
Oh,
in
absolutely.
This. Now, by the end of episode 18, did they get to the forest yet?
Yes. Yeah. They get
okay.
into the forest, which is kind of interesting that they're heading for that. And that's the first time we think that they might actually have a plan.
Well,
because it makes sense with the maneuvering gear that you would go for an area that has high things,
right.
pretty much like a town.
And initially we're thinking, oh, they're going to try and get her in here where they can maneuver better and then kill her.
Right.
That, so
right.
you and the orders go out that some of the regiment is supposed to stay outside. Two formations are going to go around the forest, and then other ones are going to stand guard on the outside, and only a select few are actually going into the forest.
Right.
And one of those groups of the select few is Eren's group that's going through the center of this well-beaten path into the middle of the forest. And he, again, is extremely questioning of that. Like, why are we doing this? And what the heck's going on? And even some of the soldiers that are stationed outside start to also question, like, what exactly are we trying to accomplish here?
Right. And then I think the really interesting thing is all of that sort of leads up, especially the end of episode 18, beginning of episode 19, where you've got the female Titan right there. She is right behind them. She is killing people left and right. She's looking at them with them in, going, hey, guys, I'm killing your guys. I'm killing your guys. It's almost like she's messing with them.
And some of those kills are freaking ferocious.
They are
like,
awful.
The one that stands out in my mind is the one where someone tries to zip by her and she shoulder checks them into a tree, just completely flattening them and squashing them,
yep.
but like without even really slowing down, just kind of, and she's just pulling on their lines and getting them into position and then delivering the death blow. And it's just,
they're
brutal.
Going down like flies.
And it's, Eren starts losing it.
Absolutely. And then of course, there comes the question, well, Eren can be a Titan. all of these people are dying for him. Does he trust that Levi knows what he's doing and that something's going on here? Or does he go, screw this noise, I'm getting big and I'm going to kick her butt myself?
Well, yeah. And that whole sequence where we get the cutback to an earlier scene that we hadn't seen before about him trying to practice becoming a Titan and him and... which leads to, obviously, you know, one of our favorite character scenes there. Which is so
reaction
awesome.
Was just so awesome.
I watched that on YouTube like 10 times just because it's so awesome.
I know.
But, you know, they show you this scene where basically they take Aaron to a well. Mm. And they say, we're going to put you down in this well. We want you to practice changing into a Titan. You're going to bite yourself and you're going to, you know, change right. into a Titan. And then, you know, hopefully you'll be able to control yourself. But if not, you're in this well. And so they leave him there for a few minutes. And then they go back to find him, and he's literally looks like he beat himself up. Like, he's all bloody. He's bitten himself in, you know, several times, and he can't get himself to turn into a Titan. So then everybody's like, I thought you could control this. Like, this changes everything. If you can't change into a Titan, like, what's the problem with that? And so he's all bandaged up, and they're sitting at a table, and he's trying to, you know, drink his tea, and he drops his spoon. And he reaches down to grab it, and he's in pain because he's, you know, beating himself up pretty good. And as he reaches for the spoon, he starts to turn into a Titan. And just enough where almost in the scene where you had with Mikasa and Armin before, it's only very partially formed.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like a hand gross. And some tissue that's
part
there.
Of a rib cage.
Yeah, part
know?
Of a rib cage he starts
nasty.
To develop. And everybody... And this was where the whole trust thing comes in. His immediate teammates right there freak out. They draw swords. They all surround him. What are you doing? No one ordered you to do this. Because, again, they had told him to turn into a Titan before. That was a very controlled situation. And this was seen immediately as, you're not following orders. You're breaking trust. What are you doing right now? This is out of control. We need to be immediately worried about you. And so they're surrounding him and drawing down on him.
Well, and I think one of the really interesting things about the scene is that it really shows how, as despite how nice some of them have been to him and sort of trying to set him up as, oh, you're going to kind of be with us and you're sort of one of us, the fact that he's blatantly frightened out of his mind. I mean, there's no hiding the fact that he doesn't know what's going on. He's absolutely freaking out, and everyone else is freaking out, and they're so afraid that they can't even see that he's genuinely afraid.
Right.
They're seeing this as, oh, it's a trick. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to pull one over on us. And Levi's the only one with a clear enough head to look at him and go, no, he's not. This kid's freaking out. He has no idea what just happened.
Right.
And it's really a really strange moment of, like, as I said before, even though you've kind of seen Levi up to this point where you're sort of like, I'm not sure if I like this guy or not. He's kind of a jerk. But in that moment, I think you really see what he does for his squad. Like,
yeah,
he's the guy that they need because he can keep his head in all of these weird situations.
And it's really interesting how his character development happens through other people all the time. Like every
right.
piece of his character that you've sort of built and added on to this point has so much to do with his reaction to what's happening around him. And as if the moment couldn't get any more tense, then you just have this great scene where Hanji is
like a squealing fangirl
over by the forest, and she immediately, like, she hears the noise that signals that something big has just happened, and she loses her mind immediately and just starts screaming, Aaron! And she runs back, and she...
Let me touch it.
Like, just this great scene of, like, she's like crying and drooling at the same time because she's she just can't.
It killed me because I've actually, as I'm sure the listeners know, I've worked many an anime convention as guest relations in my long career. And all I could think of was, I've seen fangirls do exactly this when their favorite voice actor is there and they don't know how to handle it. It's like the
right.
Beatles scenario.
It's like the Michael Jackson thing.
Right, yeah. Right. And it just killed me. Like, she literally becomes the world's best fangirl in that moment.
Yes.
And it's such a weird icebreaker. Like, it still brings the tension up some because everyone's reacting weird and there's all this noise and stuff going on.
Right.
But I think as a viewer, we realize how absurd it is and how funny it is that we kind of need that for a second to be able to pull back and take it. Again, it's like almost like a little mini breather.
Exactly.
Okay, ready to go for the next part.
You know? She touches him and then his skin is hot to the touch and she's freaking out about that.
But she loves it. She's burnt, but she's going, oh my God, it's hot. This is fantastic. Even though like her skin's flaking off.
Right. So and then she's like, you know, now I want to feel your hand that you have stuck in this thing. Like pull your hand out. But as soon as he pulls his hand out, the thing starts to disintegrate. And now she's freaking out because it's too quick. It's all disappearing. It's all going too fast. And just this whole manic scene of her just completely freaking out about it. It's just great contrast. So you've got people freaking out because they think he's a threat. You've got Levi, who's just completely stoic. And then you've got Hanji, who is freaking out because this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And she just can't wait to study every aspect of it. And so you have that happen. And then you see this quiet moment later on with that whole crew.
Right.
And there was a very touching moment because, again, we cut back to the forest and the tension of the Titan chasing them is brutal.
Oh, yeah.
Because she is literally right on their heels and about to kill them at every second. And they're screaming. And it's to a point where not only is Aaron screaming, like, I want to do something about this. I want to let me help. They're killing people. They're killing people. We can't let this happen. You even have like Petra who is saying, what are your orders, Levi? What are your orders? And everybody's screaming. And there's just this moment. And at one point, you know, they're told we're going to keep riding forward. And that's when Aaron is really struggling with that and thinking, I can just end this. I can turn into a Titan. I can end this. I can take her down. I'll stop people from getting killed. And Petra says to him, you know, we put our trust in you. Trust me now. And then he has this flashback to when they're sitting around the table and all of the other soldiers, they bite themselves.
Right.
And it's this gesture of how Aaron would try to bite himself to turn into a Titan. And they, you know, they start talking to him about how, man, that must really hurt. Like when you go through that transformation, like you actually have to hurt yourself to make that happen. And that's, you know, we might have misjudged you. Like we have more respect for you now. And it's this sort of bonding moment where they're all kind of saying, you know what? We think we can trust you now. And they all sort of show him this sign of respect of, it's almost like a salute to him.
Yeah,
when they do that.
I really love the idea of apologizing through the idea of we've attempted part of this and now we understand a little bit more about you.
Right.
And that struck me as a very Japanese way of saying I'm sorry.
Yep.
Like it's very culturally Japanese and I kind of dug that, even though obviously it's more of a Western set anime.
Yep.
So I thought that was very cool myself.
And then, of course, you know, I have to fast forward ahead a little bit, but we get to the part where we finally see what the plan was.
Oh, yeah.
And the plan was to lure the female Titan into the forest in order to trap her there and figure out who's really inside. And so they get all the way into the forest. They get to the point where you finally see that Erwin's plan the whole time was to set up all of these essentially harpoon cannons upon harpoon cannon upon harpoon cannon upon harpoon cannon, like an almost infinite number of these devices where when she gets into a particular clearing, they fire upon her and pin her.
Oh, in every way.
In every possible way.
In her eyes.
In her eyes. In her mouth.
Nose,
in her ears.
Mouth,
just
right.
Through her skin. All completely
everywhere.
Through her. In, you know, stuck in her back. Stuck in her leg. Like everything. And then they fire like 5,000 more.
Oh, right.
To the point where she
They're
is
not kidding
so,
around here.
Like completely caught up in this that she can't move. And she has her hand over the back of her neck. But other than that, she cannot move. And so at this point, it all becomes clear that, oh, this is what we were trying to do. They were trying to lure, they were sort of using Aaron to lure her into the woods. They've now sort of captured her. And there's this brief moment where Erwin and even Levi is thinking, we got her.
Yeah.
We are going to find out who's inside. And of course, they find out that that's not as easy as it's a lot easier said than done. And you see that she has the ability to armor particular pieces of her body, almost like the armored Titan. So they go to, you know, Levi jumps up to slice open the that part of the back of her neck. And she it almost looked like diamond, but it was like, you know, super hard steel or whatever, right, that she armors, and it destroys their blades. Like, they're not going to be able to get in with their blades. They're going to have to figure out another way.
Well, and of course, this is the first time that we've had confirmation that the Titans, the human-driven Titans, don't just have the ability to turn into Titans, but also have other extra abilities on top of that.
Right.
Now, we don't know yet if these are shared abilities. We don't know that if they're sort of mutant, X-Men mutant types, where it's like, she has hardening, he has fire breath, or, you know, whatever right. It's going to be. We don't really know how that's going to work, but we've never seen that they've got anything other than just the I can become a Titan
right.
thing so far, which I thought was very interesting. The other thing I really love about that beginning of that scene when they try to kind of chop into her is when Levi is on top of her head and he like stomps on the head like, hey, I know you're in there. It's yep. almost like knock, knock.
We're coming to get you.
But he talks to her and he never raises her voice. He just kind of does this like, we know you're in there. We're going to get you. You know we're going to get you. Right. How does it feel to know that your time is up? Like, he doesn't go crazy, but it's really like his moment.
He's
of
relishing
like,
it.
Well, not even just relishing. It's like the first time in a long time we've really seen how much all of these people's deaths have really gotten to him. Like,
right.
It's almost this sense of like, you killed my people. Now it's my turn for revenge.
Right.
And we're going to make this slow and painful yeah. and awful. And I'm really going to enjoy
watching
you
squirm. Hope you don't mind losing your arms and legs.
Right, yeah, right. Like he starts talking about cutting off limbs. Like, yeah. oh, I know the Titan form can do it, but how about your form? Like when I start cutting off your limbs, you know, stuff like that.
And then they start talking about how are we going to get in? Well, we're going to have to use explosives.
Right.
So we're going to have to basically blow her hands off in order to get into this part of her body. And then things turn yet again because she lets out this guttural scream.
The cornered animal scream, as Sasha says.
And yes, and that's a great scene with Sasha where that happens and everybody's like, what's that all about? You know, and some people are thinking, oh, she just knows that she's lost, yeah. you know, and knows that we've won the day and that kind of stuff. And Sasha is saying, this is when things are going to be their most dangerous. Like this scream, I've heard the scream before. It's a cornered animal. And what that means is you have to be even more careful than you were before because a cornered animal is going to fight. Mm-hmm. And then you see that scream attracted every single Titan that is in the surrounding areas.
Right.
And they are all stampeding as fast as possible. Not even caring about the soldiers who are trying to distract them or stop them or fight them or whatever. They're not even paying any attention to them. They are flocking to the female Titan as fast as they possibly can, which no one saw coming.
Right. It's basically a dinner bell.
Yep.
And the thing I kind of like about that I'm still curious about is that they don't make it really clear whether it's big Titan roar, this gets their attention, that's why they're charging, or if it's actually almost another secondary power of I'm calling you, I'm controlling
yep.
you, I'm telling you to come eat me because I don't want to be caught and I don't
right.
want these guys to know. So I kind of like the mystery of, you know, was it just to get their attention and she assumed that's what they were going to do, or is she actually controlling them?
Yep.
I suspect it's the second one, but
I did too.
But they're kind of unclear about it.
The numbers are so overwhelming that they have no choice but to retreat.
And
so everyone is completely crestfallen. Some people still don't even know what's going on because they're waiting for the flares to tell them what the next thing is to do.
Right.
And he signals, Erwin says, we're going to signal the retreat and we're going to head back. And he says to Levi, why don't you take a minute to refill your gas canister before you head back? And Levi wants to leave immediately. Like,
right.
I can go now. Let me go now. No, why don't you hang behind? And you initially, like, don't know why he's telling him that. And then it becomes clear it's because no one saw the human body. And they think back to when the Colossal Titan was there and the Colossal Titan disappeared. And they're thinking back to the fact that, yeah, these things came along and ate the body, but you never saw what happened to the human inside. So is the human inside still there? And that's when it starts dawning that this has to be someone who's knows us. This has to be someone who is a soldier. This has to be someone who is familiar with what's going on here. They're one of us. And we have to figure out who that is. And so Levi is kind of left behind as the sweeper to figure out, like, who could that be? But before that even happens, one of the other groups encounters this person.
Right. And in the group with Aaron, actually.
Yeah.
And they see them. And actually, I take it back. The person on the string that the female Titan kind of spun in the air was not Gunther. I remember Gunther dying at one point, because Gunther is actually the one that dies at the end of this episode.
Oh, right.
And it is gruesome. This person that has gotten away from her Titan body basically comes out of nowhere. They actually think it's Levi for a couple of seconds.
Yeah, they're calling out.
He realizes very quickly that's not Levi. It's not moving like Levi. That's not who it is. They try to get him an ID. And she attacks Gunther first and basically decapitates him. She hits him in midair, hits him with a sword, and by the time Aaron gets to him, his body is literally hanging upside down with the head hanging at a totally wrong angle to the rest of the body, and it is horrific. And that's how they end it.
They end it with this person flying through the trees, and you know it's one of them, and they've got their gear on, and you can't see.
She's
and it's
even
like,
got the, because we, and in fact, we're even assuming it's a she, because.
But it could, it might not be.
We don't know that your Titan body necessarily has to look exactly like you do. I'm going to go with the assumption it's a she, since Aaron, you know, becomes a guy when he becomes a Titan, so let's go with that. But, you know, you, other than that, you can't see anything about her. The one interesting thing I did find is that she is, not to say that she's necessarily part of the Survey Corps, but she's wearing a Survey Corps hood and cloak to hide her identity. So right there, I was kind of like, well, where did you get that from? Like, is that something you would have access to, or do you only get that if you're in the Survey Corps? So are we really, you know, is this a clue to who it is, or is this just a clever disguise? But oh my God, it was that moment of like, are you kidding me? Get the next episode up, because I need to know what's going on here.
And the only thing I will say as we look forward to the final five episodes of the season is that I do hope that Mikasa at some point comes back into the picture a little bit more. I feel like with how much the cast has expanded, if anything, I feel like her character has kind of sort of been pushed to the side. I mean, she has a couple moments in these last couple episodes where she's having a conversation with, in fact, was she the one that was talking to Sasha
about
the cornered,
the cornered animal, right?
You're seeing some of that, but we haven't seen a lot of that yet. So I'm hoping, because she is such a major character, we are going to see her in the next few episodes. Like, she's going to come back to play a bigger role, but I'm dying to watch the next episode. And I,
me too.
Now that we've talked about these ones, I can justify going back and watching that one. So,
well, actually, the really exciting thing about this for me is that I discovered, and once the summer watching project's over, I'm going to do this first, but I'm going to go back and actually read the whole manga series, because it follows the anime follows the manga fairly closely, but I guess there's some like kind of character things and things that kind of get a little bit bigger than they are in the anime. But apparently, with the way the manga have come out, even the manga that have been published in America, the manga series picks up at a certain set of books past the end of the first season. So you actually get to read a little bit ahead of the end of the first season and what I'm assuming they'll use in the second season once that finally gets produced.
Yep.
So now I'm kind of like, I don't even know what I'm going to do, because once the anime is over, I'm going to grab the manga, and then the manga only goes so far. So I think at that point I'm going to be like, you must give me more. I must know. I might have to go back to writing fan fiction, which is really sad at that point if I get that desperate.
Or just pay that couple to come over that were dressed as the guy and girl Titan.
They were awesome.
And have them run around your living room.
You could do like an improv attack on Titan.
I actually have several friends that cosplay as Titan. Attack on Titan characters, so I might have to pay them to like do theater at my house, so I can be like, all right, here's the remote, start guys, start, because I need to know what happens next.
So that's the latest installment of your summer watching project. In the next one, we will do episodes 21 and 22, and then we'll finish up with 23, 24, and 25. So Sarah, once again, thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. This is wicked fun.
And for Sarah, Matthew, and Brian, we are going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
For the best in comics, gaming, sports cards, and toys, it's got to be Most Excellent. Providing the best service and coolest stores for almost 20 years, Most Excellent will be the only stop you need for all your needs. Not only is Most Excellent the official local comic shop of the Secret Identity podcast, it's the local shop of those who like service, quality, and no-hassle shopping. So check it all out at www.mostexcellentcomics.weebly.com. And on eBay, it's one word, Most Excellent Collectibles.
And we are back with our Creator Spotlight. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, this week's Creator Spotlight is Mr. Mark Waid. And I called him a legend up top, which I believe that he is.
Absolutely.
He scoffs at that immediately in the beginning of this interview, as you will hear. But when you and I went to the New York Comic Fest, he was there, and it was the perfect show to get some time to sit down with him. And so we decided that, because we both wanted to interview him, that you would hit him up with all the traditional comic book stuff.
Yep.
And I was going to talk to him specifically about Thrillbent and the digital initiative. And so that's primarily what this interview is about, sort of the philosophy behind it, the move to adding a subscription element to the site, the creators that he's attracting over there, the stories that are being told over there. You will hear in this interview two things. You will hear, one, me completely gushing about how much I love it for pretty much the entire interview, mm-hmm. and how excited I am about it. And you will also hear how passionate Mark is about it. And he was a guy who, as we've talked about, was on the short list for me of people that I wanted to interview for the show. We've been doing this for 8 years now. We've been very fortunate to speak to a lot of people who are our sort of comic heroes,
yep.
creators that we admire. Mark Waid has always been very high on that list for me, and this mm-hmm. was the first time I got to sit down with him, and very happy to report that he is exactly how I would hope that he yep. would be. He's exactly who I believed that he was from, you know, from everything I've read and heard from him up to this point. He's a great guy. He loves comics and he loves to talk about comics. And so we had a great interview. It's one of my favorite interviews that I've done in a long time. And it's just one of the two that you'll hear with Mark Waid, because, you know, sometime in the future we'll have the other interview that you yep. did with him where you guys talk about tons of comic stuff. So great time. Had a blast at that show and really liked this interview. He is your creator spotlight for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of Secret Identity. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, and this is Brian here at New York Comic Fest, and I am sitting across from the legend, Mark Waid. How are you today, sir?
The legend, Mark Waid. I'm good, thank you.
And I'm going to apologize to our listeners right now, because Matt is going to talk to you later about probably all the questions they want to ask and they want to hear about of your long and illustrious career. I want to talk about Thrillbent, because I am so excited. When you guys announced your subscription model for Thrillbent, my response was that I could not give you my money fast
good
enough.
Man.
I was so excited. So we could talk about the history of Thrillbent in a little while, but when you guys decided to go subscription model, that was a very thoughtful process. Can you talk a little bit about the 2 years that went into making that decision?
Sure. I mean, we were very deliberate about it. We wanted to, you know, we always knew that the model should be, rather than finding an outside distributor and paying them to do stuff and letting them get a cut and stuff, I honestly thought the model early on was find fans who can, who are willing to give you what they consider to be a fair amount of money in exchange for a fair amount of work. Don't overcharge, don't overgouge, but at the same time, allow them to contribute. And so, you know, we spent a couple of years doing all new, stuff on the on the site, building up a library of like 300 comics for free. And we got to the next stage where, okay, now we want to go hardcore with Empire, with some other new series that we want to do. We built up some momentum. What's a fair price to charge for a subscription to that? And it I don't think there was much argument in the halls. It was like, you know, $3.99 sounds fair, because that's the price of one print comic a month. And for that, you're getting new issues of Empire, you're getting new issues of Insufferable, you're getting new issues of Charlie Wormwood, you're getting way more.
Yep.
And there's a lot more to roll out over the rest of the summer. We've got James Tynan has a new series coming out in I guess a week from Friday. I guess it's coming out on the 20th, so it's coming out by the, you know, almost by the time you guys have listened to this podcast. And more stuff throughout the summer. $3.99 seems like a fair price.
I could not agree more. And I'm a big tech nerd. I'm a gamer. I covered games for years, and I believe there's a magic price point for everything.
Yeah.
And if you hit that, then you make it an impulse buy. And for me, I had been reading Thrillbent since you started it, because I followed your efforts in the digital movement, but and not even just about digital, but I've always felt like you're a person who you want the best for this hobby. You want the best for people who enjoy this hobby. You want it to be everything that it can be. And so to me, your push for digital was you recognizing how the landscape was changing and saying, hey, we can be a part of this, and we can do this in a way that doesn't alienate the old fans, that
right.
brings in the new fans, but we know there's more eyes out there that can be introduced to comics. Let's see how we can make that happen. And for all the flack that you took and all of that stuff, I think we're seeing that vision come to fruition now.
I got to tell you, this I so very rarely bet on the right horse in life that I feel like I get to gloat about this one a little bit. That you know, for a long time it was, oh, Mark Waid hates comics, Mark Waid hates print comics, Mark Waid hates brick and mortar. No, I really don't. But I own a comic store. You know, but this, you know, the idea that, as my partner in Thrill Bent, John Rogers, puts it, you know, turning the buying of comics into a pants-free experience is actually a pretty cool thing. The idea that we're spoiled because, you know, you're in the New York area. I've lived in Los Angeles.
Yep.
You know, there are comic stores every 15 minutes. Yes. You don't have to go very far. But if you're living in, you know, Alabama or Mississippi, or if you're living in Kentucky, you know, good luck. You know, you're finding a comic store. And even then, a full-service comic store that really has the resources and the deep pockets to carry everything, that you're not going to find that. So digital is the outreach. Digital is the partnership I see is digital is the outreach. Digital is the newsstand. Yes. Digital is to get people interested who are catching up on comics or being brought in through the movies or through the TV shows. And then once they are into it, then we find them, we steer them to the brick and mortar stores, because that's the curation part. That's the part where the stores job is to say, okay, if you like this, you're also going to like this. Do you like Fables? You'll also like Saga. Do you like this? You'll also like this. And that's, you know, that's where the two can work in concert.
And I feel like as a generation that has grown up with the physical copies of things and now moving into the digital thing, to me, I write novels, so I see ebooks as this similar thing where you have basically all this content out there. As people consume this content, there are certain pieces of it that they want the physical copy of.
Sure.
You know, and you decide what you want. And in that way, print becomes the special edition. It becomes the thing that you want on your bookshelf. It becomes the thing that you want that physical copy of. And so if people are consuming millions and millions of comics digitally, but then they find their way into the store to invest their hard-earned money in the physical copies of the ones that are worth their time and money, then we've done our job on the digital front.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it also, it's a boon for all smaller publishers. It's a boon for all smaller creators because you're not having to front these insane print costs going in, and you can monetize on the web, which is harder, admittedly, but we're getting there. And you monetize on the web, and then once you get to a certain point where you've made your money back on your material, then you can invest in print, because then you also have a dedicated audience.
Right. And speaking of dedicated audience, I do feel like the route that you've taken with Thrill Bent and what you have created over there has built an audience that is now willing to spend their money on you guys. When I think of, you mentioned James Tynion, and when I think of The Eighth Seal, and that amazing comic, and we just finished The Endling from Jonathan Larson, which was absolutely fantastic. Like, I have been over there consuming that great content. I interviewed Tim Gibson about Moth City, another, which was a perfect fit that he had been doing somewhere else and brought over there. Right. To me, Thrill Bent is a place where creators come to experiment and do things that they could not do in other places. They can do whatever they want over at Thrill Bent. You know, it's the place for their passion projects.
The whole idea was we were never going to be a publisher. We just wanted to be a big tent.
Right.
Where people can come, set up, you know, and as far as editorial oversight or publishing or whatever, really it comes down to, you know, if you've got your comic, if you want the benefit of my experience, if you want to talk to me about what you're doing, or if you want my ear to listen to stuff, I'm happy to. But if you want, but it's your baby, and if you want to do your thing, then just go forth and do. And we get a lot of good stuff out of that, and I'm very proud of what we've been able to build as a model. And you know, again, nobody's making a fortune, but everybody's getting some revenue out of it, and it will continue to build over the years. And again, if nobody's in it to get rich either.
Right.
They're in it to, look, this is a way for me to get my message out in a way that all I lose is sweat equity.
Right.
You know, all I have to put into it is the time it takes me to write or draw it.
And I do feel like on the show, I have pushed this as a place where people should be dipping their toe into digital if they are traditional print consumers who haven't given this a chance. I think your move to bring Empire over there was brilliant, because that's where you get that hardcore fan base.
Exactly.
And it's funny, my show partner Matt was so familiar with Empire that when I said, hey, these guys just went subscription-based, and Mark Waid's putting Empire up there, and I can't wait to read it because I've never read it. And he said, you've never read Empire?
That's great.
Like, that is going to be amazing. Of course, I just read the second chapter, and it's... it's fantastic to, in a great move to bring that old school audience in and show them all the hard work you guys have done for 2 years there.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It really is. I mean, and everybody's been very cool about it. There have been very, very few people who have said, hey, what's with the subscription? We were getting it for free for 2 years. Everybody understood, and we always were very open with our readers about how, look, we'll do it for free as long as we possibly can, but there's going to be a point at which we're going to need some reciprocation, nothing gouging, nothing. And there will always still be free stuff on the site.
Right.
But we got to find that fair balance between what do you think is fair to pay and what can we afford to do this for. And it's so far so good.
Yeah, and I will be the first to say the value that you're getting for $4 a month is 10 times that easily. So no one should hesitate to go over. And I think it's a project that's absolutely worth supporting. Your line now is starting to curve around the table.
Okay, so
I really appreciate the time that you've taken today. I love Thrill Bent. I'm sure we'll catch up sometime in the future, but I wish you guys nothing but success with that platform.
Thank you, sir. Absolutely.